Stan? That's twice tonight. All right, we'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session. Oh, sorry, are we recording? Thanks. I'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session of the November 7th, 2023 City Council meeting. Welcome, everyone. Our first item will be turning time over to Council Member Ted Knowlton to lead us in the pledge and provide a thought.
Thanks, Mayor. I'll start with a quote from the economist and educator Peter Drucker. He said, about times like ours, he said, the greatest danger in times of turbulence is not the turbulence, it is to act with yesterday's logic. And I thought that was a very useful quote for us. And I was thinking about this in two ways. The substance of what we're addressing, and then process suggestions that Peter Drucker himself put forward. We have just fundamentally different dynamics in a lot of the things that we deal with as a city that we didn't just 5 years ago. The way housing works, our housing market, our housing challenges, housing affordability, Davis County is running out of land, and so the nature of growth is shifting dramatically. The nature of our environmental challenges, water issues, the Great Salt Lake, changing climate, those are just some of them. Our time is different, and we have to reassess our logic substantively. A couple of these have implications for process, and I'll just rely on some ideas from Peter Drucker. He recommends that leaders live with an attitude of, quote, wise ignorance, learning to say, I don't know, inviting questions and debate, embracing uncertainty and ambiguity. And then there is a related point, which is that if you practice some wise ignorance to be open to ideas, from anywhere, from residents, from any member of the staff, to be open to ideas. And I thought that was wise counsel as well. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you, Ted. Next is citizen comment. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to address the council, please come forward and state your name and address.
Dee Lalas, I live on 300 North, but that's not concerning what I want to talk about. I have two things. One of them Councilman Knowlton brought up, and that is where we put bike lanes, and I understand that we really don't have any solid data about how many people ride bikes on Orchard Drive, because people are afraid to ride their bikes on it or on the highway because of the safety. And I think that we ought to pull bikers, they have a group and they know a lot of people that ride bikes, and say, how many of you would ride your bike on Orchard Drive? How often? And that would give us some information about how wide the bike lanes should be, where we should have them, on other streets. I think we need some backup data. I spent most of my lifetime doing analysis of data, and I think that without some solid data, and without at least some logical guesstimates, that we may be throwing big sledgehammers at little flies. And so I think that we ought to have somebody, whether it's a volunteer group that goes and counts bicycles riding on Orchard Drive for a full week or something to see how many people are doing it right now, and then also find out how many eggs there are out there that would do it if we put the bike lanes in. Number one thing. Number two is that I know that we have two electrical charge stations for electrical vehicles out front. I don't know of anybody who is working for the city who has an electrical vehicle. I notice cars parked out there constantly sucking up electricity. I have done some inquiries, and I think from what I've been told, North Salt Lake is paying for the electricity that's been put into private cars that belongs to somebody who may live across the street or may not even live within a couple of blocks. And I don't think, I know that they were put in encouraging people to buy EVs, but I don't think that we need to support through city funds the providing of electricity for people, just because if you can afford an $80,000 car, surely you can afford to plug it into your own electricity and not have me as a resident subsidizing your $80,000 car that I can't afford.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the council? Okay, let's move on. Next item is special recognition of some awards. We'll turn over to Ken.
Thank you, Mayor. I am so excited about this item. It'll be hard to describe, and I'm going to turn this over to David Franson. He'll help us understand this a little bit better. It sounds like bragging when I say we have an extremely unique public works department. Even if it sounds like bragging, it doesn't mean it isn't true, because we do indeed have a public works department where the culture is different. It's different than anything I've experienced in the six cities I've worked for. It's different in most cities in Utah, and we'll learn tonight that David, in fact, is on his own time and for no charge, is sharing that culture and his best practices with other cities that have asked him to do that. But we have a great culture in public works. This award was given to David and his staff is because of an atmosphere that's been established of performance and high achievement, but also the improvement in the quality of life for his employees. And he'll go into that, and he'll tell you how PEHP actually recognized his department and how that came about. But David, in fact, when he was hired many years ago, introduced performance measurement into the department, which we had not done a great job of prior to David's service as the department head. Competition and high standards, together with training on physical and mental health, which is new and unique. They have trained on personal finances and well-being in their culture and as they do their work. They've had lots of training on retirement and so much more. I believe that David and his leadership team have truly impacted the lives of our public works employees for good and have greatly enhanced our employees' social well-being, mental and physical health. He and his team, as I mentioned, received an honor and recognition from PEHP. We really wanted to share that with the City Council and give David a minute to talk about that. We gave you lots of information in your packet if you took a minute or time to read that. So David, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate the kind words. I don't love this stuff, and but I am extremely proud of it, and I'm going to try to really be comfortable with it, because I do feel like, as much as it's going to sound pretentious, we should be proud, and I think everybody should be proud. We started something a few years ago, and it's called the Life Focus Series. And as part of that Life Focus Series, we brought in people from drug abuse, from, like Ken mentioned, financial advisors. And I'm really proud of a lot of that, because one time we had the financial advisor, and I called our HR the next day, and they said that almost all of my guys had started adding money to their 401s. And just little things like that, I think, really improve people's lives. Well, we had PHP. They do some classes. They've done them on nutrition, on stress management, on some different things. And they have a representative there that her name is Leanne Geigel. And Leanne had came and given us a couple of presentations. And after one of the presentations, Randy, who's here tonight, she came up to Randy and I afterwards and said, what's going on here? Something's different. And she started asking questions and started following up on how we were doing things. And she's like, can I bring in my bosses? Because you guys get it. This is the stuff we're trying to get other cities to understand. Anyway, really cool. So she came in and we kind of just shared stuff we've been doing and talked about a lot of the things. And since that has happened, they asked us to come speak at the PHP conference. I've actually spoke at a couple different ones. John has been asked. I don't even know how many cities we've talked to. A lot of cities are really trying to emulate the things that we're doing, and that to me is really cool. I have other slides I kind of forgot. Giving the presentations is cool because I believe in the ripple effect of good work. I believe sharing good work is important. John did a great job with his presentation as well. Just today they've asked us to do another one. I don't know. It's kind of some too much a little bit, but like Ken said, we've worked with other cities on Fridays and different days, just trying to more for my curiosity to see if this stuff scales, to see how they can take this stuff and really run with it. And it's pretty cool. This slide shows South Jordan doing a lot of the same things that we're doing. They're using tracking, and they're starting to do a lot of the same things, which is kind of cool for us little guys to kind of be guiding the big guys in some ways too, I think. But anyway, as a part of this whole thing, where's that award? Oh, so anyway, as part of the award, and I should have asked, I don't mean to put you on the spot, Heidi, but there's actually a cash value to it. I don't know if you remember what it was.
$8,600.
Yeah, $8,600. So pretty cool. So it came with some money too. The thing when we start talking about culture is really it's such like a nebulous concept, and I think it's easier felt than it is described. And I think even for some of the guys in our own department, I don't think they understand how unique it is, because I always like the term fish are the last to discover water sometimes. They don't, it's just there and they don't really understand it sometimes. But what makes me so proud of this award, A, is they kind of discovered us. And B is that really, this group of guys, why this is successful is they're the ones running it. This is a bottom-up situation where everything we're doing, culture's a verb. We approach it that way. It impacts our outputs. It impacts the work we're doing on a daily basis. We give autonomy to our guys, and we focus on social aspects. But we're also very high focused on high performance. And I'm just really grateful to stand up here on many occasions and represent these guys and Carmen. And I just really appreciate the mayor, the council, all of you guys and city staff's support for everything we've done. It's really felt. I don't know. I just think it's really cool, and I'm proud to receive the award and not so excited to stand up here and talk about it, but anyway, I also have today, we always talk about performance and being what the back of your baseball card says. And so I've actually got you guys the new set of cards I'm going to give you today. So take 5 minutes, check it out, what these guys are doing, because they're doing a lot of good work. And, you know, 99% of the stuff we do, nobody sees. And it just taking a few minutes to really kind of understand the great work means a lot to me. And it means a lot to me with this administrative staff, my guys that I work with. John's been amazing, and Randy's brought a ton to the table since he's been promoted, and so has Carmen. So thanks for giving us a couple minutes, and I'm going to go sit down.
So I'd just add one additional thing, and thank you, David, for the presentation. That was probably one of the more difficult ones that David's had to make. I know how he feels. I think I would say this. One observation that I didn't mention in my opening statement is that over the years, as this culture has changed and become the norm, I've also observed that both David and John and Randy and others have delegated leadership responsibilities to subordinates at a rate that allows those subordinates to become skilled supervisors, skilled presenters. They are held accountable. They take responsibility for managing pieces of what Public Works does. And I've appreciated David assigning staff members within the Public Works Department, for example, to take on safety. They have a safety training officer. So one of their employees is required to make presentations, to give teaching about training. And those are opportunities that he has given to many of his people. And so I would just wanted to leave that additional thought with you, that I think David and John are growing leaders among the staff. And of course, as I always say, we're not a perfect organization, but we're doing things right in Public Works for sure. So thanks again, David.
Thank you. And Ken, isn't it true that we're implementing this now into the what I call the home office here?
We are doing more. That's one of the benefits of creating David's position is that we're doing more leadership training, more skill development throughout the city. So he's spreading that throughout our other departments as well.
Can I say something real quick? I love this, and I, with part of my work in the Parks and Arts Board several years ago, I was able to see this over many years. It's such a fantastic program, and I feel really proud about being associated that with the city. One thing that I know happens a lot in the Public Works Department is that the public doesn't interface with them unless there's a crisis or they're mad. And I think this is such an impressive, fun, positive way to potentially outreach with the public, where we could use as our social outreach, just honestly, just these cards, and just post them occasionally on our social media, where we say, hey, here are some of the people. I mean, if we wanted, we could block out people's names. We don't have to put their names on there, but like, this is what our fleet mechanics look like. And these are some people working in the, like, well, this is what they're actually doing when you're not yelling at them. I think it's a really insightful and interesting way for people to engage with their city and to see this behind the scenes works.
I love that. And I think we should start with the slap. Because that is awesome.
So we'll be trading these in the future.
That's right.
Yeah. All righty. Next item is Heidi talking about the financial report for the period ending in September 30th.
All right. So first and foremost, for September, there was not a lot to report, no new trends as far as revenues or expenditures, though I do want to bring some sales tax data to you in a couple months once we have some more data and just kind of show you some 10-year look-back stuff that I've been looking at. I have to laugh about this because we are officially in our audit era. Are we not only going through our annual external audit, which happens every year, but we had a URS compliance audit and a sales tax examination at the same time. So we were undergoing this all through the month of September and into October. And if you can see the frequency, sales tax, they come on site maybe once every 5 to 10 years. And then URS does a every 4 year compliance audit. So we've been very, very busy. We're getting those results back. The sales tax, we did find some underreported revenues back from 2020 and 2021, so we'll have to pay those. So it was about $3,500. Overall, I was really excited with that because in that period of time, we switched point of sale systems, we switched finance directors. So I feel like that was a pretty good result there. There was no penalty, and they were great to work with. One of the reasons they mentioned they were eager to come out and look at us was because we had taken on a restaurant and a grill, and we were new filers for a restaurant business. And I'm happy to say that all of our filings, we had no reports of problems with those filings. So that was great news to know. We started up kind of this new set of functionality, and we did it right. So that was good. And then as far as the URS compliance audit goes, we just got some data back the end of last week. We had a couple of pay codes that weren't always reporting as eligible for retirement contributions. And so we're looking at that, and we'll have to get some figures on what that looked like. We had one back in 2019, and I think we ended up owing about $10,000 in back contributions. I'm hoping we do better than that. One of the pay codes that we found was our retroactive pay. So when sometimes folks get a step increase, if it doesn't go into effect on time, it will get paid retroactively back what they would have gotten for a pay period or two. So those are very small amounts that we had the findings on, so I don't anticipate we have a huge exposure there, but I did want to report it. And we had our last visit from our external auditors, or closed out our field work with them today, and are working on our ACFR. So we've just been very, very busy with all of those audits on the finance side. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I did get to present to the Senior Lunch Bunch in October, which I loved. I presented the budget summary document. I added a few slides for some of the sales tax stuff. It was great. We had great questions. We looked at some per capita data, got questions on South Davis Sewer District. It was just a really good experience. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I'm hopeful that they'll invite me back to come talk about property taxes, because I really love to talk about how property taxes work. So anyways, it was a great, great thing.
I'll make a note of that.
Okay. All right. And that's all I had. Were there any questions on the financial statements?
Okay. Thank you so much, Heidi.
Thanks
for all you do.
Thank you.
Occasionally someone at the county gets mad at me still over Heidi leaving them. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I've got the next item on the agenda
okay.
as well, if there aren't any questions.
Keep going.
All right. So this is for an amendment to our water utility ordinance. There is a section that is, oh, I skipped right past it, and you can barely see that. But this is a section that's related to what we do when we have delinquent accounts. So one of the processes that we have to actually collect on delinquent accounts is to actually shut off people's water. We work really, really hard to not get to that point with customers. So our current ordinance reads that after 65 days, or I believe it's 3 months, we can begin that process. The difficulty is, the biggest difficulty with the ordinance, the way it reads now, is there's some date restrictions. So the shutoff process, it states, will only happen between the 5th and the 12th. That's when we'll do our water shutoffs. Well, for our water department, and for our preference, we like to do them on Wednesdays because we want people to have the opportunity to have the water turned back on before we leave for the weekend. So that gives them Thursday to coordinate. There is a $50 reconnection fee, but if they have to call after hours, it increases to $150. So expanding those dates or removing the dates altogether really helps us work with our residents. And that's what we hope for. When we start and we look at that shutoff list at that 65 plus days, we look at it at the beginning of every month. And we usually start anywhere, like actually pulled some data on that. Or April in our utility billing department, if you've ever worked with her, she's fantastic. And she actually pulled this data. So in July, we started with 66 people that would have been on that shutoff list. And so in a week's period, between contacting them and working out payment plans, we only had to do 5 shutoffs. So that's our goal. It takes a lot of time to turn people's water off and then turn it back on again. And it's usually impacting those who have the least ability to pay that extra $50 or $150. So this will really help both the administrative staff and utility billing, as well as the public works department in coordinating that process. It usually does go run from a Thursday to a Thursday, but you see in this case, if you look at this calendar, if we took that Wednesday the 6th, which would be the Wednesday that falls in that 5th through the 12th, that's when they're out reading meters still. So they're not available to run shutoffs. And we've had that come up a couple times where there have been other projects that have impacted the water department's ability to go out and assist and do those service orders. So if we don't have the ability to tell people we're going to shut their water off, then they're not always encouraged to pay, and that list gets bigger for the next month. So I am pleased. Overall, the average outstanding balance on these at 65 plus is between $250 and $350. It's not absolutely horrendous, but that's the whole point. We don't want them to get in that 90 to 100 day, 20-day period where it's very difficult for them to pay that balance down. I did add some or request some amendments to some clarifying language related to the 65 days. The way it reads now is it's 65 days or 3 months since the payment. 2 months felt more consistent when I kind of mapped out what that would look like based on our billing cycle. And then last, the ordinance authorizes the finance director and the city manager to establish or authorize payment plans. And really, I felt like we've got a full-time city treasurer that's full-time responsibility is oversight of collections of city funds. So I was proposing or requesting to change that to the finance director and the city treasurer, who have the most direct day-to-day fiduciary responsibility, which would leave and free up the city manager for any escalation of processes. If there was any complaint about a payment plan that we were proposing, then that would add another level for a customer to go to. And I think that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Any questions on this? No. That's almost a motion, isn't it, Stan? Looks really good.
Yeah, I think so. Can I make a motion? I make a motion that we approve ordinance number 2023-14, an ordinance amending certain administrative processes in section 8-1-3B, delinquency, disconnection of services of the City of North Salt Lake Water Utility Code.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Elise.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
You know, one of my favorite Spencer Cox stories. He was the mayor down in, was it Fairview?
Yeah.
And he had to shut someone's power or water off. And he said, this only probably only happens in Utah. But so we shut the gentleman's water off. And then I went over as his bishop and gave him a check so that he could turn his water back on. Okay, next item. Sherry Pace is going to talk about Resolution 2023-44R, a resolution amending the city's comprehensive fee schedule related to building permits, deposits, and credit card charges.
Okay. So this is kind of to fix a problem that we've been having or that is a potential problem. So we have a requirement for new construction that when they submit a building permit, they pay a $500 deposit. That's meant to cover at least partially the inspection or the time that our building official takes in reviewing a building permit. As you might know, that some of our building permits are more complex. So recently, an example of this is we took a $500 deposit to review the plan set for the Come and Go gas station. And that over several months, many staff members, both the planner, the permit tech, the city engineer, the building official. We went back and forth with the contractor and the engineers, and they were really slow on getting their updates to the plans. So that's why it took a long time. And come to find out, the reason it really took a long time was because Maverick was buying all the come-and-go stations. And once that was done, then Maverick went ahead and scrapped the project. So we had the plan ready to issue. The plan review portion of the building permit was $6,000. And we'd collected $500 as a deposit. Now, that staff review was internal, so it wasn't like an expense that we had to go out and pay. Yes, we lost staff time. But sometimes if we're doing a really complex project or we have multifamily, multi-story buildings, we send those out for our third-party review, which is WC3, which does cost us a lot more. And we actually would have owed them money and lost money on that transaction with that deposit. And so what we want to propose is to change the deposit so that the $500 deposit applies to residential single family duplexes or townhomes. And then for anything else that's commercial or the multifamily, because under building code, a multifamily residence, even though it's a residential use, it's a commercial building permit, that we charge a deposit of 75% of the estimated plan review fee. That's really easy for our building permit program as people apply to do that calculation, because we have them put in the square footage of the building. We know what type of building it is that they're applying for, and that's based on the square footage and valuation, which comes from the building table. And so all of that is computed internally in the program and then verified by our building official. And that's what we would like to do, so that we do not end up in a situation where we've sent out plans for review and we didn't collect a deposit that covers the cost that we still would owe to the third party reviewer. And also so that we don't lose staff time, because we do have a lot of we do have a fair amount of commercial plans that get put in and then people decide not to build. And so we've spent a lot of time on it. And we think that if they have to pay a deposit that's more substantial, that they'll actually be more invested in finalizing the permit or waiting until they're sure that they have the financing in place to get the building permit. The other issue we have with the $500 deposit is that when we take a deposit for solar, so when people are installing solar, the plan review is usually less than $500. And when we take the plan review fee, it's put in a separate GL account from the permit fee, which the plan review fee covers the plan or the staff time for reviewing, and the permit fee covers the inspection time. And they're in two different accounts. And so when we've taken $500 and then the plan review fee is $250, then we have a GL transfer that we have to make, and our accountants don't like that very much. And it's a little bit of a problem for us. So we'd like to reduce that plan review deposit to $100. The last change that we're making is we have always had the credit card user fee. It has been under building permits, because when people, there are certain builders that like to pay for $15,000, $20,000 building permits with their credit cards so they can get Sky Miles. And then we're on the hook for the 2% that the Visa charges us. So we've charged the 2% convenience fee. But it's in the wrong place in the fee ordinance, and it should be in the miscellaneous category instead of under just building permits. So those are our proposals for the amendments to the fee schedule. I've written the resolution so that it takes effect on November 15th, which is the same effective date for the impact fees for water and stormwater. That way we don't have to have two updates. It can all just take effect on the 15th. So that's our proposal.
What do other cities do?
So other cities also take deposits. It's usually structured something similar to this.
So this is not out in left field?
No, it's not out of the ordinary at all.
Okay.
I was kind of surprised that we actually didn't do this already. But I did have the one thought. We did get in a lawsuit a few years ago. I'm sure we can justify all our expenses here, and they're reasonable. And
They're all per the building code and the valuation tables that are adopted by the state of Utah for valuations.
So what's happening at the Come and Go property? Nothing? It's just going to stay vacant for now?
So it'll be owned by Maverick. I don't know if they'll decide to build a Maverick gas station there too, or if they'll sell the property, or if they'll just hold it. So, but they did acquire the property as part of the overall purchase of all the Come and Go facilities.
If they get a third property there, they can build a hotel, just like Monopoly, right?
Mayor, I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2023-44R, amending the comprehensive fee schedule as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Deb, let's start with you.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of Resolution 2023-45R, a resolution approving the city's policy statement related to retired benefits for elected and appointed officials. Ken?
Thank you, Mayor. This is a little bit of an unusual issue. I don't think we've talked much about retirement or the Utah retirement system with the council, but from time to time we have a need to do that. As Heidi mentioned in her presentation, we went through recently through a URS audit, which is scheduled every 4 years. That audit revealed that we did need to establish written and approved by the governing body policies for how elected and appointed officials participate in tier two retirement benefits. And so you may remember that tier two describes those folks who are in public employment and are qualified for retirement benefits, but who started after July 1st of 2011. And tier one is a group that is prior to July 1st of 2011. The resolution, if you go to the next, I think there's a slide in there. This is a summary of what's in the resolution, and I'll just kind of walk through that. We wrote this, I would say one thing, we submitted these policy statements to the URS auditor, who has accepted those policy statements as being compliant with the URS rules. The second thing we did was we looked at what our current practice has been, and so the resolution reflects the current practice of the city of North Salt Lake. So the first thing it does is, for elected officials, it clearly states that you're not participating or you're ineligible to participate in the pension plan. That is, you're not going to receive a pension after you turn 65 or whenever the eligibility would be. But you are eligible to have any payments made by the city put into a 401k or a 457 plan. And many of our elected officials have done that. So the resolution actually is written so that this applies to both Tier 1 and Tier 2. I did that just for the sake of clarity for the Utah retirement system. The second statement is that for Tier 2 appointed officials who are also full-time employees, they are eligible for full retirement participation in the URS, and our city code identifies several appointed positions. You may remember in our administration chapter, in the very beginning of our city code, it says that these are appointed positions: the city manager, the city recorder, the treasurer, all of our department heads, and any assistants to those department heads. So we have possibly an assistant city manager, or an assistant police chief, and maybe others. And so we wanted to make sure and be certain that none of our Tier 2 appointed officials who were full-time employees were at risk of being removed out of the Utah retirement system. That would be very traumatic for anybody who's been in there. And then all of our other Tier 2 appointed officials are ineligible. And these would be anyone that the City Council appoints to a citizen committee, the Planning Commission, or other appointments that you might make. From time to time, we make special appointments for different positions. So anyway, those are the clarifying statements. And again, that was we do need to submit a resolution with those statements or statements like that. If this is not reflective of the policy that you want, we can, in particular for elected officials, we can change that. I don't know what that means. If you want to put yourself in the pension plan, we'd have to go back and probably make some back payments for people. But anyway, I didn't need to say that. I'll leave it to you. That would be the end of my presentation. I'll let you decide what you want to do.
Any questions on this?
So if I understand correctly, if we put elected officials, make them eligible for the pension plan, only elected officials who were elected before 2011 would be considered.
No, I think you could say any elected official, Tier 1 or Tier 2, and then we would be subject to contribution payments that we didn't make.
Oh, okay, I get it.
That we would have to make on your behalf.
Okay, perfect.
So
thank you.
Why would we have to do back payments?
What's that?
Why would we have to do back payments?
If you wish to participate in a full pension plan, so which you currently don't as an elected official.
But why? It's not clear to me. Yeah. Why, if we made a decision today to participate in a pension plan moving forward, would we have to go back and pay in the past?
Because all elected officials would have to be treated the same, even if they're past elected officials. You can't.
Why?
You can't create the policy today and have it only apply to the future. It would apply to past elected officials as well.
Why? I'm sorry.
I don't know why.
That's a rule.
That's the law. It's in state statute.
That answers it. Thank you.
Thank you. I should have said that instead of I don't know why. It's kind of the way the world turns, but it's a state statute. So. Yeah.
Any further questions, discussions? Do we have a motion on this?
I just think it would be ridiculous if we, as elected officials, expected to receive a pension.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, that's not even an option.
Lisa, that was almost a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 2023-45R, approving the city's policy statements related to retirement benefits for elected and appointed officials.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further comment, discussion? Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Thank you, Ken. Next item is consideration of proposed city comments on the I-15 public comment period, Ken.
Thank you. So, so this item is, sorry, I've got my notes here, but I've put them in a different spot. So you can keep going on the slides there. Thank you. This is the portion of the I-15 project that runs through North Salt Lake. And you may remember that earlier in 2023, in January, there was a public comment period. We made public comments during that period, and I included those in your materials, plus the responses from UDOT. As a staff, we have had meetings with UDOT. We've been kept fully informed on their work. They've met with us individually. They've met with us as a group of cities in Southern Davis County. And we feel like there's been a good process of interaction between city staff and UDOT staff. With this current comment period that we're in ends next week, ends soon. November 13th. And I'm proposing that we make at least the six comments that we put in the staff report, and I'll briefly go through those. The first comment would be, and if you advance the slide, would be that we are requesting to still include Center Street, the Center Street off-ramp in the I-15 project. We are uncertain how that would impact the route of the freeway, but we believe it would move the freeway a little bit to the east, probably have an impact on Hatch Park. But if you saw the comments from UDOT, I don't believe they have an intention of including this in the project, but I think it's important that we continue to request that the Center Street off-ramp remain. I think that's a good public comment for us. Okay, if we go to the next slide, this is the intersection of 2600 South where we'll spend some time. Our staff has noted that on 2600 South, sidewalks and the frontages of several developments are impacted by this project. And so we would like to make the comment that sidewalk needs to be replaced. And we have a 10-foot wide landscape buffer that's required of all of our developments. We believe that UDOT should put that in and take whatever steps they need to acquire property and make that happen so that our commercial properties stay in compliance and they continue to have a good aesthetic quality. The second comment on this graphic is that if you look on the, so on the north side of this intersection, this interchange, which is so north of 2600 South on the west side, you'll see 800 West, which is currently, it's a freeway off-ramp where you come off the freeway and you enter a T-intersection on 800 West. If you put your arrow a little bit further north, right there, that's where you sit today to make a left turn onto 800 West, and then you enter the 2600 South system. That road south of that location will be completely vacated in favor of a new routing of 800 West, which goes under the freeway. So it comes south and then travels east under the freeway, and it will intersect with Wildcat Way on the east side of the freeway. Does everybody see that? So our comment here is that we believe 800 West ought to be beautified or otherwise treated in a way that's aesthetically pleasing on the west side of the freeway. You know, it's a comment that doesn't really address traffic circulation, but we also don't want UDOT to forget that we in fact participated in landscaping upgrades in the current interchange, and we would like to continue to have this interchange be a very nicely landscaped area. So we will make that comment and that request. The second...
One question on that. So the intersection of 26 and Wildcat is our version of the Nephi Death Strip. Is there any concern about directing more cars onto
yes,
that?
Yes, there is. I don't know, Craig, do you want to take a minute and discuss that? Let me preface his comments by saying that we previously stated that we, as a city, liked this alternative. We're somewhat, well, probably more than somewhat, we are in conflict with Woods Cross. They are opposed and would like to have the Wildcat Way 800 West intersection reconfigured because they don't like this approach. So just so you know, we're not all unanimous in our support of this interchange, but our city took a position a year ago that we did like this configuration.
What was Woods Cross's objective or concern on that?
I'm not sure I completely know what they would prefer. I think they would prefer that 800 West continue south and intersect with 2600. And they kind of feel like they're losing a lot of good traffic circulation.
And also an IHOP. But that IHOP is not good.
Thank you.
Raise your hand if you've gotten food poisoning at that IHOP. So really, we need to stick with this configuration.
So I'm glad that Natalie reminded us about the Woods Cross connection. They did have concerns about their businesses.
Can you note IHOP. The quality of the IHOP yes. in the comments in the we letter? Will.
Yeah, I mean, please keep Lorena's, but get rid of the IHOP.
I couldn't agree more. I don't go to the IHOP near my house either because they're just not very good. So anyway, Craig, do you want to address? We've been discussing safety at that intersection. So,
well, the mayor is absolutely right. That is our number one accident intersection in the city, and it does correlate amazingly close with school getting out and starting. Inexperienced drivers with a relatively challenging left turn in that situation is always going to be a recipe for mistakes. Luckily, the vast majority of them are non-injury accidents, but they can be fairly high property damage accidents, disabling cars, and on occasion we have had some serious injury accidents there. But I also understand the objection that Woods Cross City and the business owners in that area would have. They've made a substantial investment in their properties. I really think this is going to come down to a judgment call on UDOT from the feedback that they get from everyone. We've made our position clear, and they have access to the exact same data that we have in our city. In fact, we provide this data to them. So without sounding completely hopeless, I get the sense that UDOT's going to make their decision. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Anything we could do to influence UDOT to reduce the likelihood of especially left-hand turns and even through turns from, I think it's R500 East that goes into Wildcat Way, would be advantageous to us, and I think we've reflected that in our comments. Does that accurately represent where you see us being also, Ken?
Yes, thank you, Craig. And I think it's important. What Craig just said is important, and it's not on the list of 1 through 6, but I would propose that we add a comment identifying that as a high as our highest accident location in the city, and that we indeed we become very explicit in our comment about UDOT taking a careful approach to how that new intersection is built to account for safety. So we'll add that comment
if it would be okay with you, Ken. Maybe we could talk about a way to phrase that with not just the property value assessments are going to have to evaluate if they do rearrange that, but the substantial property loss that goes on. I mean, there's value that needs to be considered outside of the risk to personal safety and life there. So
this is I'll make a parenthetical comment here. There are locations all up and down the Wasatch Front on the I-15 system. This is my experience with I-15, where UDOT has rebuilt those interchanges a number of times without having success at making them better. Um, 90th South is a good example. And every time it's rebuilt, it's equally congested. It has high speeds. It has accidents. It has, it's just, and I fear that our 2600 South, because of the physical constraints of the roadway there, may be one of those locations where it may never be a very good or convenient. It might be convenient, but it won't ever be a really good interchange, either getting on the freeway or getting off the freeway. So, and particularly this stretch that we're talking about, where Wildcat Way is in, right in the middle. So between Highway 89 and the freeway, it's a pretty hard place to drive. So, and it's very difficult to have access to adjacent properties there. So, thank you for that, though, Craig.
Can I make one comment, yeah, though, looking at this? And maybe this is a minor thing, but down there on the west side, on the south side there, they show that trail bisecting that land that we were hoping to get a business in. Yeah, right in the middle. I'm wondering if
we'll make that
should be moved
that
over, so it's not right in the middle of that.
We will make that comment. That's a great
That should be an IHOP.
Yeah.
There should be no more IHOPs.
Just making a note of that.
No more IHOPs.
No, I'm making a note of the... I noted your concerns about Woods Cross a long time ago. Yeah. Okay. The next comment on this graphic is that adjacent to, right near where the trail, where Councilmember Porter saw the trail, is the mobile home park, Colonial Woods. We recently installed a sidewalk from 2600 South along the east side of that project on Overland Drive. So if you just take your arrow straight down, right in here, there's a new sidewalk that the city participated with a grant to complete. And so we would like to make the comment that that sidewalk needs to be replaced. I said in error in the staff report that the sidewalk's being removed in front of Orbit, and that's not the case. We think it's just in front of the mobile home park. Okay, let's go to the next slide. So on a more positive note, this is the new interchange on the south end of the city. We believe we should make a comment that the new trail, they will take out the trail that exists today and rebuild the trail. We would like them to replace it at an elevation that prevents gravel and debris from getting on the trail like it does today. And we've had lots of discussions about that in city council meetings. And then a safety concern, and that is where driveways and streets cross the trail. We think that the trail should get priority, and by that I mean it should have signage, it should maybe be raised, or it should have an alternative surface treatment that calls attention to the trail so that people are safer as they cross over that trail. So we'll make that comment as well. There would be a crossing actually on the very south side of the graphic, on the south end of the graphic on the east side. Keep going down, right where that driveway is into the gravel pit. That's one location. There's others south of that. I think that's probably it, right? For in this showing in this graphic, but there's a couple south of that too. But we do want that trail to be viable and safe. That's a summary of the comments that we think we would make, and we'll add those two comments that came up. But if there are questions or other comments, we can certainly discuss those or add anything that you want to add. And then what happens from here is we would prepare a letter for the mayor's signature, and we'd submit it by November 13th. You won't see it again, but I'd be happy to send it to everybody after we sign it.
I'll just do a basic comment that I think that they're very well thought out, and I support the inclusion of all of the statements that you have outlined.
I'd like to add too. I think the piece of it that is critical
is the cooperation of Salt Lake City on what we're doing to the south and what's happening on Beck Street. And I don't know if that is sort of a tangential statement that we put in there, but we anticipate cooperation or something with Salt Lake City. It would be nice to have that in there.
And maybe encourage them to go out to bid like in 2024 instead of 2026.
We could certainly make that comment. Tell them that.
Well,
it's
I look at, it was funded. And while they're playing with this, the cost doubles every couple of years. You know?
Yeah, and I've actually talked to some UDOT staff about the schedule. I think at this point, the project is moving fairly quickly. As I see the bottleneck or the choke point in time is that this is a very large and complex project, and it all has to be approved by the Federal Highway Administration. And so that really does add time. All these public comment periods and other things we've been going through are statutorily required to be on a schedule. But I think that what's going to really slow this down between now and when it starts is that Federal Highway Administration review and approval.
The prospect of litigation. I think that they will always face that.
Yes.
Have we abandoned suggesting they elevate the freeway at Center Street at all?
Yeah, good question. So we made that comment, and what we received was a response where they put together a draft, a couple of draft ideas or possibilities for separating Center Street. I reported on that just recently with the council. Horrox Engineers and others looked at that and didn't feel like it was that they could really give us a lot of solid answers yet. But that's the project we're working on, is to look at that feasibility of separating Center Street and looking at the viaduct as we talked about last time.
So do we need to add that in, or do we miss our window of opportunity?
We could continue to say that. I think we could also say that we could repeat our request to include the 1100 North Bridge. 1100 North Bridge. Did I say that right?
Yes. Yeah.
In the project. That was a previous comment we made. We can address rail separation.
Well, I would
just
look
to
at
put it
it
on the record if you'd like.
Yeah, I look at it as if we could, move I-15 slightly east and elevate it, I would abandon 1100 North in favor of a Center Street.
Mm-hmm.
Aqueduct, so.
Yeah, and then it preserves that.
And that would preserve that option of a Center Street bridge.
And it would overcome Union Pacific objections.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, we'll put that comment back in. It's a good comment. Anything else?
That comment of an increased height then. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that one was in the previous letter.
Oh, okay.
Was it?
I would have to look.
There was some discussion. I don't know how far it went, but do we have let's say that we got a little bit of that. Could we lower Center Street a little bit under too to start our rise, get more elevation there? I don't know what's in that area.
Yeah, I think that without doing any engineering, it's hard to say, but I think that would be the concept.
Seems like most of the oil pipes and stuff were on the other side.
Yes.
Further west, so.
So it doesn't appear that we've raised the issue of elevating the freeway at Center Street. but
we wouldn't get much, but maybe we wouldn't need a lot.
Right.
Yeah. We'd we could even throw out, like, we'd have to give up our off ramp there. So we'll give that up if you.
That's great.
From our position of strength.
Yeah.
Great. I don't think we need a motion on this item unless you'd like to make a motion, but I've taken notes and we'll put a letter together for the mayor.
I think you should make a motion.
All right. Let's. I'll entertain a motion.
I mean, it's an agenda item, correct?
It is.
Okay. I think we should make a motion to approve the comments on this EIS study that now are approximately eight of them, but they've been identified and can be memorialized in the minutes.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and second. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Next item is consideration of Ordinance 2023-15, an ordinance amending Title I, Chapter 6, Section 6G of the City's Code regarding the severance pay of certain city managers.
So I don't know that I have a lot to report on this one, other than to let you know that your city attorney is the one who I think prepared this ordinance based on your instructions. So if you have any questions, we can ask him.
Well, I would turn over to Lisa, since she's the one that made the catch on that last time. Are you comfortable with this ordinance now?
Yeah, I think it's good that we corrected that, because it was legally impossible the way it had been written before. So that was good. And I note that the original contract has been supplanted by the new paragraph, and the new paragraph doesn't state the wage or the salary, and I think that is probably better. It's also more accurate.
Any further discussion, comment on this?
Mayor, I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
I move that the City Council approve Ordinance Number 2023-15, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of North Salt Lake amending City Code regulations regarding the severance pay of city managers.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of Resolution 2023-42R, a resolution approving an amendment to the agreement number 2016-52A, employment agreement between the City of North Salt Lake and Kenneth J. Leatham. Ken?
Again, I don't think I have much to report. This was the item that was on the agenda last time, and so if you have any questions, I can try and answer those, but
I have a question.
Yes.
What does the J stand for?
Johnson.
Johnson.
Okay. I have ID if you need it.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes.
I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2023-42R, a resolution approving an amendment to Agreement Number 2016-52A, employment agreement between the City of North Salt Lake and Kenneth Johnson Leatham.
I'll second the motion.
We'll go Stan on the second. Is that any other further discussion? Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item, approval of City Council minutes for October 17th, 2023.
I have a change.
Okay.
And I already gave it to Wendy. It's basically at line 93. I asked if this project was necessary, but really the word I used, I think, in addition to that, was critical. And that's what I want. I asked if this project was critical and suggested a citywide public poll. And also, if residents would be willing to bond, is really what I was asking.
Okay. Any other corrections to the minutes? I'll entertain a motion then.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve meeting minutes from October 17th, 2023, work session and City Council meeting.
As
amended.
Second.
Lisa's got the second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And I'll just note for the minutes that I did not vote because I was not present.
Okay. That passes. Thank you.
Hey, can I ask the city attorney a question on that? Is it necessary for a person to refrain from voting even if they hadn't been at the meeting?
I don't think so.
I don't think it's legally necessary, but I think it's a fairly common practice.
Is it?
Yeah. I see it exercised most of the time by council members who aren't present at a meeting.
Okay.
Not unusual at all.
Okay. Next item is action items. This is where I should say, I think the over-under on tonight's meeting was 8:35, so I don't know. I don't think we'll make it, but
there's still time to come back.
Yeah.
You're doing good.
Any comments, corrections on the action items, additions, subtractions?
They look fantastic. Thanks for following up on all this work. It's a very helpful format.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to city council reports. We'll start with Ted.
Okay, let's see here. Three things. First of all, just before I jump into the three, I want to give David Franson a heads up that if you can help me with a report on the Parks and Arts, since I was not there, any kind of particularly salient things, we could also turn to our chair, Tammy, who is here. So I didn't want to surprise you both by just popping it on you last second. That's the third item, is the Parks and Arts report. I was not there. The first thing is I just want to thank those that came and come to council meeting, which includes tonight four of our city council candidates, which is super cool. And then the fifth one, right, oh, my mom the council, but yeah. And, you know, not to single out Colin Larson, but he often comes too. And I just think it's a show of commitment that, you know, here taking notes, listening, and it's it gives me a lot of, no matter how this election turns out, I think that we're going to be in good hands. And I just wanted to thank everybody that comes. That includes Dee, who always comes and provided great public comments tonight. And so thank you. Second item, we had a Wasatch Choice workshop. When was it? Last week? And not for this discussion, but I'm sincerely interested in any feedback to help inform how we could do that better at Wasatch Front Regional Council. Now, putting on my councilman hat on that, one of the biggest thing that we did in that meeting is provide feedback on the routing for the Utah Trail Network. If a line, a Utah Trail Network route were to go between Davis County and Selig County, it is completely obvious where it would go. It would go right on Highway 89 and on into Beck Street. It almost has to go in North Salt Lake, right? I mean, it would, by definition, it would have to go in North Salt Lake. So it seems to make sense for us to lean into that as council. And I think it would be, I'm taking the perspective that it would be a clear positive for us, that there would be funding and maintenance through UDOT for a high quality facility. And so we think about the items that Karen and Sherry discussed in our work session of, you know, a mixed-use path on Highway 89, this could be a great opportunity for us to kind of not just bring that along, but also through UDOT work out what happens north of us and where does it go. This is funny because it's kind of dual hat item for me. But it's going to be more UDOT that follows up with communities on that, although Wasatch Front may be in the mix. It could be that there is a convening of groups of communities to talk about a natural origin and a natural destination for trails. And that's my sense of the big opportunity for us as a city with regard to the Utah Trail Network. But I also kind of just wanted to, I guess we can't really discuss it because it's not an agenda item, but maybe that is something that we do put on as just a discussion item. I don't think we need to actually take an action, but anyway, but I guess I'll just leave it at that. I wanted to really highlight the Utah Trail Network opportunity that relates to that workshop.
Ted,
yeah.
You know, I had to leave for another meeting.
Yeah.
I guess in my mind, when I think of trails,
yeah,
I'm up on the mountain more.
Right.
Seems like that would be a natural place too, along from our Tunnel Springs Park, headed towards Salt Lake. And I would assume so as a city, do we have some input and what recommendations, and or is it? Because I mean, that's the trail system there goes along Bountiful Boulevard, Eagle Ridge Drive.
Yes. So two points about that. One is that they used the word trail, but when you look at their criteria, their goal is to serve utility destinations, or put a different way, where people want to commute. So they're thinking, let's serve commuters in as they try to get to job centers and, you know, educational centers, etc. So that's part of the reason why I think that there is definitely value for an eastern side trail, but that's why I think that they are going to be more interested in a more centrally located trail. Okay. Trail's a funny word. And then the other is, I certainly think that we can have a big influence and that they do want to know what cities think, but I don't think that that is their only consideration.
And along those lines, Redwood Road is obviously right. Another
thing that concerned me, yeah, that meeting was that there was people at the other table that were saying it might be a good idea to utilize eminent domain for trails. Yeah. And I said, okay, you see how that flies at the legislature. But that we really, really, really have to want that if we're going to get beat up on that one. So I don't think that's going anywhere.
Well, I would support that idea, mainly just because we use eminent domain for other transportation purposes. So we should at least have it on the table, even if we use it extremely sparingly.
And I respectfully disagree. I think even in the Utah Code, we can't have eminent domain for parks.
No, you're right. We can't, 100%.
Yeah, and I don't think we should.
Okay, well, we can disagree on that
one. I kind of thought that the way they wrote that, unless it's changed since I looked at it, is that if you had a trail system that went, you know, from point A to point B and there was a holdout, that you could use domain.
Is that what your point was?
Well, no, I thought that was the way the law was written. I guess we could ask our attorney, but I remember when that law came into place because it kind of happened in our city here. Because as we were trying to put in our trail system up here on the hill, and there was a state legislator that thought we were overrunning our rights to force them to put a trail in. Anyway, it kind of came out, I thought, that if you had a trail that was planned and it was putting put in and it went from point A to point B, but you had a holdout right in the middle that you could still use in a domain to get that one section.
In that particular situation only.
Right, right. You couldn't go in there and say, we're putting a trail in and we want to take everybody's land.
Yeah. Not that I'm aware of, though. but maybe Todd knows otherwise, or
well, like I say, unless it's changed, that was the way it was originally written, and that was quite a few years ago.
I don't know if we used eminent domain or if we just started talking about eminent domain, but we did for the sidewalk, sorry, on Redwood Road at 1100.
That's right.
And if a trail is very similar to that in connectivity, I think that that's an okay thing to think about for trails.
Well, and I think the sidewalk was put in because it was really a safety issue. It wasn't a recreational trail issue. It was put in because it was safety.
And I think I can shed some light on that, that when you know, UDOT uses eminent domain for a road, they can include in the definition of the road improvement the sidewalks. It's part of the project. I mean, if the trail was within that right-of-way and it was packaged as part of an overall project, they could probably make it happen. But that's different than a standalone trail.
Todd, are you able to opine on this?
I can tell you the statute says the right of eminent domain may not be exercised on behalf of the following uses: trails, paths, or other ways for walking, hiking, bicycling, equestrian use, or other recreational uses, or whose primary purpose is as a footpath, equestrian trail, bicycle path, or walkway.
That sounds okay. All right.
That's that one. And then the last one is, just key one or two items from the Parks and Arts. You know, David, I don't know if an update has been provided on the dog park conversation as an example. Is it okay for me to turn to you?
I think I'm trying to remember what I said last time. So dog park, Woods Cross is in. I'm not sure what you didn't know. Working on the agreement with them. The trail's in on the one part there. I think we're good to move forward. In fact, talk to them today. Even going to probably try to start the water line soon, but still need to, they want a memorandum between an agreement between the two cities there. So Parks and Arts last week. We're meeting, actually, and I'm not sure if we told you, next Tuesday. So, and the big thing probably there is just kind of starting to plan for next year and move forward on stuff. I don't have the agenda in front of me, but.
That's great. Thank you. Tammy, all good? Okay.
Is Woods Cross in at 50% or less than 50%? 50. Nice. What if we take their IHOP?
Ted and I were lock and step. We crushed it. We got 50 feet.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Lisa?
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Stan?
I don't have anything either.
All right. Natalie?
I don't know if this is in poor taste because I'm never going to be in another meeting where this could be discussed, but I'm interested in having a discussion about whether the 410 system is still meeting the needs of our residents. And I think that it would be great to look at what the ideas were and the needs were when it was implemented, if those are the same needs now, and if it is meeting the needs of our residents. So I would love to add that to an agenda in the future if I can get one more council member to agree.
I agree.
Thank you. All right. Is that it?
That's it.
Elisa.
I just want to say thank you to the Parks and Arts Board for all of the events this year, but especially the Halloween event that is always so much fun. And I know it's a lot of work, so thank you. That's all.
Okay. Todd, do you have anything for us tonight?
I do not, Mayor.
Okay. Mayor's report. I don't have, a couple of things. Last night, the rec center had a truth and taxation hearing. We had, maybe 150 people come. They were all happy. Some were happy for different reasons. It was actually a good discussion and good points made on both sides. The net result was that we rejected the proposed tax increase amount. We will reconvene next week and probably pass something lesser, a lesser amount on the tax. It's kind of a, you know, while we need to get our house in order there financially, we also need to make some steps towards adding to the revenue. And so I think it was a compromise position, probably a good one.
Mayor, can I please?
Yeah.
What has the rec center decided to do about the expansion that they had been discussing?
That is not even being considered at this point until other things happen. And I've kind of conveyed to Ken, you know, as you remember, the city's made a commitment to hold land aside for 3 years. And I think it would be a long shot at this point to think something's going to happen in that time.
And does that also include expansion at the Bountiful site, like that 50-meter pool?
We're in some serious discussions with the school district where they've committed some revenues, but we're finding the ongoing maintenance of the pool is very expensive. And then we're also dealing with a fourth high school now using the pool that is not part of our rec center district, Farmington High.
Farmington.
So there's still things to work out there, but I would say that is equally down the road.
I would ask you in future discussions to make sure that Farmington's paying more, because they are taking really, really valuable training time from Woods Cross and Viewmont and Bountiful.
Yeah, agreed.
Mayor, one other thing on the recreation. I think all of us may have received an email regarding alleged racial discrimination occurring. I talked to Ken about it, and it's not falling on deaf ears, but I'm deferring to our city attorney to handle this particular issue.
So Jamie's involved in this, and we'll go into a closed session at our next meeting, but it was an interesting strategy of this person to reach out to Clinton and Sunset and parts unknown to the district, but we're trying to get information from them, and the media's, of course, jumping on it. So, I just had one. I was driving down one of the streets the other night and noticed the street light out, and I know this has been a hot topic lately, but outside of our police department, we really don't have people driving around at night. Is there a procedure for city to become aware of streetlights?
Yeah, there is a procedure. John, do you want to explain that to the council? We just been discussing this.
So we check streetlights 4 times a year, October, December, February, and April. We'll drive the entire city, write them all down, and then we send them out for repair so we can not just send onesie-twosies to the company to have them repaired. So we batch them all together the best we can. We found that trying to do it later in the summertime is just too hard because of the daylight hours. You know, you'd have to be out there at like 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever to catch the streetlights. But usually October is our biggest month for repairs. This last October has been had quite a few more repairs than we have in the past, but we've got the contractor working on those currently, and we'll be checking them again here in a couple weeks.
Is it too late to add one that the mayor saw?
Absolutely not.
I think it was by Montclair in that area. And that does raise a question. We're doing some work right there, I guess, huh?
We are.
to stop the
some drainage and
drainage issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Keep going.
There's one on 900 North as well, in between Redwood and Fox Hollow.
And I would mention that the lights that cycle on and off, those are probably the hardest ones to catch.
Yeah.
Because it might be working when we drive by, and then it shuts off after we turn the corner. So.
There's also one on Springwood Drive that intersects with Spring Ridge Drive, and it flashes.
Okay.
Okay. Last week we had Meet the Candidates night. I thought it went very well. Pride in my community, six awesome candidates, and we'll be well served going forward. Thank you for everyone. I know it's kind of tough to sometimes throw your hat in the ring and jump in there. One thing, I was sitting there feeling really relaxed because I didn't have to participate at all. And after each question, I was like, oh, I want to add something. So, Wasatch Integrated Waste Management. This probably is a little premature, but I think we need to plan down the road of having mandatory recycling. And I've got a thing here on bundling curbside service. Currently, Woods Cross is the only city in our district that does mandatory bundling. But I think we can't escape it at some point, so we need to look at that.
Do you mean mandatory bundling, like your trash and your recycling?
Yeah, it's just.
Do they do green waste as well?
That may be optional. And I think because of our relationship with Bountiful Cities, being able to take green waste there, maybe that's not going to be forced on us. But
16 years ago, you were opposed to any kind of recycling. It's nice to see how you have grown. Ron still talks about it.
Remember, though, no one was more opposed than Mayor Sheva Schaefermeyer.
Here's my point about, I raised a family of six on one garbage can, and the two people living across the street have two cans and a recycle can. And it's like, just don't create it in the first place.
That's what we have to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's better to not create it than to recycle it. And in my professional life, I deal with TI allowances, tenant improvement, and I'll have a space built out, walls, offices, carpet, ceiling tile, and a tenant will come in and go, oh, this is great, we'll take it, but we need all these walls moved this far. Yeah. And so we're tearing out carpet, sheetrock, ceiling tile, grid, all goes to the landfill. They move in their new space, and they'll call me up and go, I've got this piece of paper here that I want to recycle. How do I, and it's like, yeah, you just filled the landfill. Don't worry about
it. Can I ask a question, though? You just mentioned something about Bountiful City and green waste. Is there a place in Bountiful City that North Salt Lake residents can take their leaves and their tree cuttings and stuff?
To their dump.
To the landfill.
I've lived here for 23 years. I never knew that. Yeah. I've got four bags of leaves in my garage now.
It's a $5 fee every time you go. They don't even ask for your driver's license.
Okay. They'll take green waste because they make mulch out of it or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
You just don't want some young driver to decide when they flag him because he went too far forward to back up into your vehicle and take out your radiator. Yeah. Don't want that.
So I was out of town over the weekend, and I haven't had a fire district meeting, but the Wardell home just across from our city in Bountiful had a devastating fire. I'm sure the home was a total loss. I haven't heard how it started or anything, but everyone got out safely.
Chimney. We were told this morning. I don't know.
problem.
Yeah.
And then my last item, the League of Cities and Towns at their convention, maybe it was the last St. George convention, had a speaker, Tim Shriver, you might recall, and his Unite project and his Dignity Index. The League has embraced that, and also the governor's civility, let's argue better kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so they delivered these to Mayor Arvey's house. but these are the Dignity Index cards. And I've been instructed to distribute them however we see fit, so I've got them here. And probably we really haven't noticed because there's so much harmony in our city, but there is a lot of progress we can all make. So that's it. That's all I have. Ken Leatham?
Just two quick things. December 6th is a Wednesday, and that will be our next city council meeting. I'm hoping that you'll all be able to attend, especially Councilmember Gordon. Will you be here?
Yes.
Great.
There's going to be a party.
There might be something.
I just think we should kind of keep it low because other people are going to be celebrating their election results when we canvass. And I don't want anyone to go, well, I won, but it was all about Natalie again.
If you wanted to interrupt your Mexico trip, we could party real hard on December
1st. It's just San Diego. It's not Mexico.
Oh, I thought it was Mexico. Okay, well, just as good. And then the second thing is we do need to go into closed session in order to discuss the purchase, exchange, sale, or lease of real property.
I guess since our next meeting is so far off, we should announce the night of our party. What's that, the 1st?
December 1st?
Yeah.
Friday night.
Also the Winterfest.
Tonight. Yeah. We have to go into closed session.
The Winterfest is November
27th.
Monday night.
Yeah.
The 27th. After Thanksgiving.
The Winter Lights Fest.
Yes. Let me add one more thing. And I went to this last year, and I'm planning on going again this Saturday at 11. The City of Bountiful has a great veterans program. And it's worth attending if you have. Having a slow Saturday, 11 o'clock at their Veterans Memorial Park. Okay, I'll make a motion to go into closed session. Or I will entertain a motion. Yeah, I nominate myself king, and I will make all the motions from now on.
I make a motion that we go into closed session.
I'll second that.
For the purpose of discussing purchase of real estate.
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah, for discussing
the purchase, exchange, sale, or lease of real property.
That.
Let's
and
do
second that.
Okay, let's do roll call, Elisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. We're in closed session. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you. And everybody, thanks for running your elections, working so hard to campaign. It's been hard. I appreciate